Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Do you know a fact you think we should discuss on this show? Visit the You Produce section of our website and send us the fact. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Well, the latest gentrification battle in the city is going on in Bushwick, or East Williamsburg in real estate lingo. Tom Robbins has a long piece on it in the July 3rd Village Voice called The Second Battle of Bushwick, and he joins us now to give us the latest on the L-trainification of this Brooklyn neighborhood. Tom, welcome back to WNYC.
Morning, Brian.
And before we jump in, we will open up the phones right away to residents of Bushwick, past, current, future. What do you see going on in your current or previous neighborhood? 212-433-WNYC. Are you a recent transplant lured by the promise of living in the next Williamsburg? We want to hear your story. Have you been there a long time? Are you fearing being displaced? 212-433-9692, or post a comment on our webpage, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. So, Tom, give us some context. What's happening in Bushwick?
You know, here's some context, just for starters, Brian. It's 30 years ago this month were the devastating blackout riots that savaged a good part of Bushwick, which has always been one of the city's poorest neighborhoods, in which it lost a lot of middle-income families just prior to the riots, and which was hit very hard by arson both before and after, leaving a neighborhood that was just really staggering for years. It slowly built itself back. It did so with the help from public sector. The Housing Authority built one of its most successful housing projects there called Hope Gardens, a low-rise 1,000-unit project that helped revive the neighborhood. The New York City Housing Partnership built a lot of affordable homeowner housing. And then, essentially, Williamsburg happened, and it spread eventually to Bushwick. And it was almost as though someone had fired a starting pistol, because speculators, investors, landlords have sprung into the neighborhood in the last year to 2 years and have purchased buildings, many of which are fairly, you know, inconsequential. They're three- and four-story frame buildings, many of them, and essentially trying to drive out as many current tenants as they can, because there is a new market in town in which these apartments can be rented for double and triple what they're currently getting.
And it's funny, looking back, even before 1977, we think of the South Bronx as, you know, the poster child neighborhood that symbolized New York's decay in the 70s. But I've read stats that say from 1969 to 1977, one out of every eight buildings in Bushwick was destroyed by fire each year. Did Bushwick kind of go through the same thing, but without the same level of attention as the South Bronx?
Well, I think New Yorkers like myself, yourself, I mean, who lived through that era, knew that Bushwick was just devastated by arson in a way that even worse than the Bronx was. The Bronx got the notoriety, you know, partially we're having this show running on TV now, the Bronx is burning story,
right,
and Howard Cosell's notorious comment in the middle of the World Series. But
remembering 1977.
But, you know, Bushwick was just devastated. I mean, in the course of doing this story, one of the things that was striking was and when I say we, I did this story in combination with a dozen students from Hunter College who did this as a project basically to honor the memory of Jack Newfield, a longtime investigative
reporter. Oh, this
is
this year's Jack Newfield Hunter College Journalism Project?
Yes.
I didn't realize that.
Oh, read the hard copy. We have a big box right in front of And yes, exactly. And we wanted to do essentially Jack had pioneered the worst landlords, and we wanted to do a worst landlords in one neighborhood. And we were inspired by the work of a great man, a priest named John Powis, who was the pastor for many years at St. Barbara's, which is right in the middle on Central Avenue in Bushwick, who has been fighting to try to hold on to affordable housing for his parishioners for years.
So rather than focus on the worst landlords in the traditional sense, how they treat their tenants, this really focuses on the landlords who are abandoning their tenants. It's no heat, no hot water, broken locks on the front doors, mice and roach infestations, all the usual stuff, but with the intent to get them out.
Absolutely. I mean, the similarities were just astonishing. From building to building, we ran into the same thing. We found new owners who had ginned up the prices of buildings which were selling for maybe $150,000. These are like 6, 7, 8 unit buildings, all of them covered under the city and state's rent regulation laws, and had simply stopped providing services, and in every instance were simply offering tenants de minimis amounts, and by de minimis I mean like a couple of $1,000s to leave. And those tenants who did take them up on those offers reported back to us that they simply couldn't find new apartments, even in this neighborhood that many of them had grown up in, for less than $1,500. So $2,000 didn't take them too far. But it, as I say, it was almost like someone had just sent out an alert to the speculating community that said, Bushwick is hot, let's get these properties. And it's really created a crisis, one that the city's housing department is starting to respond to. There's a lot more work to be done here, but all this stuff is violation of law. I mean, one of the, we get kind of passe about gentrification. We've heard it so long, but essentially everything that's going on in these buildings is illegal. These guys are breaking the law by not providing services, by basically giving people a choice of take my money and leave or you won't get any services. It's crime going rampant in this neighborhood right now.
Let's take a phone call from Ian, a bus driver in Brooklyn. Ian, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yeah, good morning, Ryan. How are you?
Good. What do you drive?
Okay, yeah, well, whenever the L train goes down, we cover the L train shuttle service. And over the past
That bus that goes from stop to stop in place of the train.
Sometimes from Broadway Junction to down to Lorimer, or sometimes actually from Canarsie to Lorimer. But anyway, I've been watching the change over the years. There's a color change that's slowly creeping up from Williamsburg. You drop off like these, I guess you re-joke around, you know, maybe at the end of the line and say, oh, here comes the trust fund kids, you know, the guys with the guitars, the artists. You know, there's one point you drop them off in Williamsburg, then they're coming slowly up Wyckoff. You're dropping them off at DeKalb, and you're dropping them off at Halsey. You're like, hold on, you know, the neighborhoods are starting to change. And it's, even if you look, what's sandwiched between Bedford-Stuyvesant and Ridgewood are the same exact houses in Bushwick that are not taken care of, and you can see it. I mean, if I had a crystal ball and I had money years ago and I knew Bushwick was going to change like that, I would have bought in Bushwick myself.
Ian, what about the people who you're not dropping off there anymore? Do you have any sense of where they're being forced to move to?
And I would love to tell you East New York, but East New York is next on the map. I have no idea. They're probably going out to the island. Really. They're probably going out to Long Island.
Ian, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. Call again. Tom Robbins, where are the people being displaced to?
That was a fascinating phone call.
Wasn't it?
The guy's
there
right
it is. He can see
it happen,
block by block. Isn't that something on the job?
You know, some of the reports we got from Father Powis, the pastor at St. Barbara's, and from others was that parishioners were trying to move in with relatives who had bought homes in Pennsylvania. You know, there'd been a lot of new construction of relatively low-cost single-family homes in the Poconos, and people were trying the commute. And then he said that a lot of people have returned at the same time because they just couldn't make it work, either the commute or the jobs. People are doubling up the same response that people had to the gentrification push in the Lower East Side in the 80s. People are apparently moving into East New York, exactly as you said at this point, but not clear how long they'll hold on there.
You know, he mentioned the artists, and he called them children of people with trust funds. But a lot of artists who feel they don't have any money, and that's where they move to, you know, marginal areas where the rents are affordable, they also resent the gentrification.
They do.
But you call them in your article the shock troops of gentrification.
Yes, but I say that that's a circumstance which is thrust upon them. I mean, I've seen it happen over and over again in 30 years of reporting on change in New York's neighborhood. I saw it in Soho. You know, I mean, the people who are the pioneers who are willing to live next to poverty that other middle-class people won't, the people who are willing to adapt abandoned industrial buildings tend to be artists, and they do a job which, unfortunately, even ends up displacing themselves. I've met many artists who ended up not being able to stay in the neighborhoods that were turned popular because of their work in making it fashionable. I don't think that's not where we're pointing the finger here with this story. I mean, I think that in many ways gentrification is beneficial, particularly to a neighborhood as poor as Bushwick. The problem is that the laws need to be obeyed, and that the rent regulations that are on the books, the laws that call for landlords to provide basic services, need to be enforced, particularly in a rising market, and that's the crisis that you're facing right now. And that doesn't point the finger at somebody who's moving into a vacant apartment. They're taking advantage of a situation, and I don't think anybody blames them for that. It's the people who are there right now.
Maggie from Bushwick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Maggie.
Hello.
So?
Hi. I was calling to say that I know that their intention wasn't to frame it as the gentrifiers, as the artist community versus longtime residents, but just the language that was used in the article I found sort of did frame in a way as far as the battle and the whole shock troops against for gentrification.
I could respond. I tried to frame it as carefully as I could, Maggie. I don't believe that yourself, if you're an artist who has moved to the neighborhood in recent years or others, and we had students who worked on this project who had lived in Bushwick, both as coming there in recent years. I don't think that there's an intention here to displace. I think that if there's a fault to be found, it's in speculators and investors who are seizing on the new popularity of the neighborhood and are forcing out low-income people.
Yeah, because the arts community, and it's actually something that is being recognized with me and several people that I work with, that we have very similar interests to long-term residents of the area, as far as keeping it affordable for all of us.
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, I saw in the Lower East Side, which went through the same wrenching debate in the 80s and the 90s, that artists tended to be the people who were most vociferous in trying to hold on to affordable housing for current residents. I think that's absolutely true.
Maggie, thanks for your call. We're talking with Tom Robbins from The Village Voice, and his article called The Second Battle of Bushwick is about the L-trainification, if you will, of Bushwick becoming known as East Williamsburg in real estate broker lingo. You know, we trolled around Craigslist this morning looking at Bushwick housing and found 1,358 hits, and that's everything. Sales, rentals, roommates, wanted, needed, office space, including one that's allegedly MTV crib-worthy, you might say. It's a $4,500 a month rental for a five-bedroom Victorian house, and another that says, great location for the new IT area, hip, trendy, young, and chic neighborhood, condo conversion at its finest, be the pioneer, interesting word, which implies that nobody lives there, $1,350 a month, one-bedroom, unbelievable find, slick, modern condo, and at the same time, the mortgage foreclosure rate is skyrocketing.
Yes.
And so this even relates to kind of the fallout from the subprime mortgage scandal, doesn't it?
Yes, there's a lot of homeowner housing. We didn't look at that in this story, but that's another issue in Bushwick and in adjacent neighborhoods in Bed-Stuy of homeowners who have been victimized by scam mortgages. But, you know, I would just repeat that, I mean, the lessons, if any, that were learned from the transition in the Lower East Side and from other neighborhoods that have gone through this is that if government doesn't step in to try to intercede and to uphold the law, all of this stuff gets lost. I mean, the market, the private market can almost not be resisted. The ads that you're talking about, I don't have a problem with them. I mean, I think it's a reflection of reality. But the issue becomes whether or not the existing tenants get a chance to be able to go into housing court, get represented. You know, we spent a lot of time watching these cases where landlords are seeking evictions of people. 90% of the tenants who go into housing court never are represented by attorneys. It's like a completely lopsided battle. As much as decent judges may try to stand up for them, you see time and again where people end up signing stipulations, mm-hmm. agreeing to move where they absolutely shouldn't have.
And talk about rich and poor side by side. You heard those ads that I read. And according to a recent Daily News article, on the other side of things, just as of last year, over half of Bushwick's residents were receiving federal assistance, 50% below the poverty line, and the second highest rate of mortgage foreclosures in the city after Bed-Stuy.
And the most housing code violations in the city is in Bushwick.
And it's still, I guess it's still going on. I don't know if, you know, predatory lending practices are is too strong a term for what we also saw on Craigslist, but there were all these ads in Spanish that translate as things like, why rent when you can own your own home? prices lower than the value, free consultation, next to nothing initial. I guess that means next to nothing down. Your credit doesn't matter, all in Spanish, which, you know, which again indicates that there are predatory lenders out there.
Yes, well, there's a market, and there's clearly a desperate, there's a desperate need for affordable housing. And, you know, to his credit, Mayor Bloomberg has made, he's focused attention on the need for affordable housing in this city. He's mostly so far talked about creating new housing and on making sure that market rate housing includes some portion of affordable housing in it, such as he's did in the Greenpoint Williamsburg zones that were new construction going up there. But this other piece of holding on to existing rent-stabilized housing stock, this is where the greatest really affordable housing resource is in the city. And I don't think this one has made it to the mayor's attention span enough
right.
yet.
And the mortgage foreclosure rate is somewhat ironic, too, because it used to be incredibly difficult for Bushwick residents to get mortgages at all because of redlining.
It was completely redlined for years.
And then the predatory lenders began targeting low-income neighborhoods like
Bushwick.
Now they'll
throw money at you.
And mortgage, yeah. And, you know, and so I don't know where in there is the ideal. We don't want people locked out of the mortgage market. So maybe easier credit is better than no credit,
yes.
even with the risk.
Well, let me just bring it back to renters again. You're right. This is one other crisis that they're facing. But we looked at people who couldn't afford a down payment of any kind
right.
on a home. We
right.
looked at people who live in rental housing. And New York has always been a renter's city. And this is the situation in Bushwick for more than half of the people there do rent. And all of them are vulnerable to this kind of landlord harassment that's going on, and that's the step one. Even before you get to someone being confronted with a potentially predatory lender, these are folks who are really just trying to make it from month to month, and there's no reason they shouldn't be able to. They're paying their rent. They're living by the rules. I mean, some of our stories, if you look at them, we have people who had lived in homes for 25 years, had like done whatever they needed to when the landlord hadn't provided heat and hadn't provided lights. They had gone themselves to Con Ed and gotten the lights back on. They had called the city to get deliveries of fuel. And then all of a sudden, the market heats up, and here's a new owner who says, okay, time to go, and by the way, you owe us tens of thousands of dollars of back rent. And they say, well, there wasn't anybody here taking care of the building for years. How could I owe any money? And they go into court with these assessments against them, and it's very hard for people to beat them.
We just have a minute left, but I want to get Adam in Brooklyn, who's a Brooklyn historian, in here for just a second. Adam?
Hi there. Thanks, Brian and Tom. I appreciate your work. I just want to take this back to the first Battle of Bushwick leading up to it in the 50s and 60s. You know, the crisis in 77 would not have happened if not for the predatory real estate actions, a blockbusting and, you know, redlining, scaring, you know, long-time residents out of the neighborhood, and it was only the state stepping in that stopped that. And clearly, I just want to back up Tom, it's going to happen again. And anybody looking for that should look at the work of Marty Gottlieb in Our Dying Neighborhoods.
There is an exhibit on Bushwick at the Brooklyn Historical Society right now. Adam, I have to cut you off because we're out of time. But Tom, real quick, are there policy responses that are needed to this, in your opinion?
Yes, absolutely. I think the mayor's got to make this, draw a bright line through this neighborhoods like this and say, we're just not going to let people break the law. We're going to enforce rent regulation, and we're going to enforce the housing code.
So gentrification, to some degree, is natural as markets and demands change, but they can't break the law
exactly.
in the process. All right, the article on the July 3rd, Village Voice on Bushwick, the second Battle of Bushwick, written by Tom Robbins. Tom, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So the Senate has been up all night debating withdrawal from Iraq, and they are about to vote. We'll check it out in a minute.